Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Happy Tuesday to us all. Dominic, an election day right here in the great state of Wisconsin. So we'll keep an eye on that. We'll talk about that more in the happier 4 o'clock happy hour. And we're expecting a fine guest very soon. John Nichols from The Nation, a friend of ours. Oh, John's ready. You know, I had a very intriguing headline, but we'll start with John. John Nichols, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Thanks for joining us, sir.
Hey, John.
Hey, man, I'm here to serve. What do you need? I'm ready to go for it.
We appreciate that.
Well, John, let's talk about the cancel culture surrounding the Georgia voting laws. And John, obviously, there's been some reaction on both sides. We've seen everyone from Major League Baseball moving the All-Star game to Delta Airlines to Donald Trump's beloved Coca-Cola Corporation denouncing these voter suppression laws rolling out in Georgia. And here's my question, John. You know, we've described the big lie as Trump basically saying he won the election and, you know, Joe Biden rigged it or Hugo Chavez stole it from him, something of that effect. That's the big lie. But now Republicans have turned this full circle. Now we're trying to cancel them with a big lie and these laws. These are all good laws. This isn't Jim Crow at all, John. What do you think about this whole current narrative, this cultural war, this cancel culture?
So complicated. Let me just break it down in the simplest of ways. What George is doing, that's Jim Crow. Right. It's the new Jim Crow. And it's actually being done by folks who remember the old Jim Crow. And they know exactly why it existed. Right. It existed because of racism. It existed because of a desire, which is always associated with racism, to give power to those who have had power for a long time and let them keep it by disenfranchising those who might vote to put someone else in power, who might actually create a new majority. I mean, that's what's happening in Georgia, and we know exactly why they're changing the rules. If these were good laws, gentlemen, why wouldn't they have passed them 5 years ago or 10 years ago? I mean, what about now makes these laws necessary? But what makes them necessary is that Georgia's changing, right? It's evolving as a state. And the last several elections, going back to 2018, we've seen a pattern of a rising majority in Georgia that has not voted for Republicans. And so they're changing the laws to make sure that Republicans can still win elections. And I put quotes around the word win. By gaming the system. And what I think is fascinating is we're now coming to a point where we're going to see a test. And it's an important test. Is Donald Trump's racism sufficient to lead him to give up Coke for Pepsi? And if you know the real battle between Coke and Pepsi, what it's all about, you understand that that is no small matter.
He'll never give up his beloved Diet Coke, I suspect, John Nichols.
See? Well, then, you know, then he is a racist and a hypocrite.
Yes, he is.
John, you talked about the timing of these voter suppression laws in Georgia. If it was simply about the timing, well, then you could use the example of Wisconsin under Scott Walker's governance and the Republican-controlled gerrymandered legislature for the last decade. Well, John, they were innovators. They were cutting edge. They've been suppressing votes since 2011 here. It's not just about the timing. It's about the intent, of course, John.
Well, of course it is. But also, again, I'll go back to that timing issue, right? That why did Scott Walker and his allies move so quickly to make it so hard for the great mass of people to perhaps remove them, right? They try to make it so hard for people to vote. Well, the answer is very, very simple. They knew that they dumb-lucked into power in Wisconsin. It's a different dynamic than in Georgia. In Georgia, Republicans have had quite a bit of power for a good period of time here. in Wisconsin, it was a swing state, right? And the Republicans who came to power in 2010 knew full well that they were lucky, right? They got a Republican wave. It was a good year for them. And what did they decide to do? They decided to change the rules so that the future elections couldn't, you know, send a wave in the other direction. And the key thing they did was gerrymandering, right? They drew legislative districts, especially for the state assembly, that were so warped that you had election cycle after election cycle where more people voted for Democrats, and yet you kept an overwhelming Republican majority in the legislature. That's gaming the system to give an advantage to the loser. It's allowing the loser to, quote unquote, win. And then to put icing on the cake for them, they attacked all sorts of other basic structures of voting, right? They tried to limit the amount of early voting. They tried to limit weekend voting. They tried to put restrictions on all sorts of other accesses. And of course, they did their voter ID laws, incredibly restrictive voter ID laws, which were just ridiculously complicated and went against basic constructs of Wisconsin vision for how you do elections, which was historically, we sought to have really high turnout elections where a lot of people could participate, where you got a real reflection of the sentiments of the state. And the way we did that was by saying, look, you know, you don't have to jump through a lot of hoops to vote. Scott Walker and his allies created hoops you had to jump to. They made it more complicated. That's what's happening in Georgia. And so there is an element of timing on it, right? When people have power, they seek to maintain it. But there is, of course, also this deeper, more nefarious tendency to try and use your power to maintain your power, right? To make sure that those who are in office won't be voted out of office, despite how incredibly horrible they may be.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. John Nichols, the national affairs correspondent with The Nation, joining us on the phone. John, it's always a pleasure. With regards to Georgia, though, you talk about timing, and you also mentioned that the, you know, they've been in power down there for some time. So the Georgia election was operating under laws instituted and implemented by a Republican majority.
People, yeah.
Right, and they were fine. So you look at the timing. Well, number one, if Donald Trump had won Georgia, they wouldn't be doing this, in my personal opinion.
Of course not.
Number two, and there's no fraud to indicate that there is a reason that they need to change it. The only thing that happened was they got out hustled and they lost. They lost the election.
Right.
So now it's almost so very clear to me, John. It's hard to even have a rational discussion with any of the Trump supporters about this because it seems so very obvious.
Well, when exactly did you have a rational discussion?
Once in a while, John, I can dig one up.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, it's like you're sort of setting a pretty high standard there. But in fairness to them, they have been trained by their media to believe a fantasy, right? To believe that there is voter fraud, to believe that there are, you know, somehow threats to democracy posed by, I don't know, a lot of people voting, right? And if a lot of people vote, there's a chance you won't be able to prevail the privileges that, to which you've become so familiar, right? That you value so greatly. And, you know, at the end of this thing, I think you have to understand that the Republican Party has accepted, not publicly, not openly, but they've accepted in reality that they can't win a fair election. I mean, that's their message. And they may want to say it differently because, of course, that's not a very attractive theme, right? That's not a winning way of approaching things. But the bottom line is this. In Wisconsin, in Georgia, in places across this country, remember, we've got something like 300-some bills floating around across the country to try and make it harder to vote, according to the Brennan Center. Again and again, they default to this view that they can't win a fair election. And that's what Democrats, frankly, ought to be talking about. That ought to be their core theme. Instead of getting into the minutia of it, right, they should make it very, very clear that all of these laws have a single purpose, and that purpose, clear, undebatable, is to diminish democracy to such an extent that, again, the winners of elections are the people that were supposed to lose.
John, here in the state of Wisconsin, as you know, campaign finance laws were changed basically because the former governor, Scott Walker, was breaking them. He was coordinating with third-party groups.
Oh,
he was accepting money. Basically, you give the money to group ABC 501c3, and they'll coordinate their ads with me and my campaign, which was illegal when he was doing it, but they changed all those laws. So here's the current incarnation of that. We got Mitch McConnell basically telling corporations, send money and then shut up. Don't talk about politics. Can you have it both ways, John, as we go to break?
I know it's really frustrating for Mitch McConnell, right? Here he's delivered for corporations for years. And, you know, like, thought they were his friends, and as such, thought that they agreed with him and thus peddled the lie that corporate speech was somehow threatened and had to be protected at all, at every turn. Now, when a handful of corporations actually start saying things he doesn't like, he's horrified by the idea of corporate speech. And you know, again, this is the thing. As we said about Trump with Coke, you know, what we're learning is the guy is a racist and a hypocrite. And the fact of the matter is that Mitch McConnell is probably, you know, Mitch McConnell is Donald Trump on steroids. If Donald Trump was a really bad guy, he'd be Mitch McConnell.
Well said. Wow. John Nichols, our fair guest. He'll stick around for one more segment. I hope you do as well. More Devil's Advocates on the other side. John Nichols from The Nation.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
I used to run track.
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. If you miss any of this fine program, please go online to domandcrute.com. You can listen to and download podcasts and interviews.
Dominic, we got a fine guest live via phone. He is John Nichols from The Nation and the Cap Times here locally. John, thanks for sticking around. Wanted to talk about our congressman, Mark Pocan. And Mark Pocan tweeted at the Amazon Corporation, effectively, you know, stop calling yourself a progressive corporation just because you pay $15 an hour if your employees have to relieve themselves in plastic bottles during their routes. And Amazon said, you know, that's urban myth. That never happened. And they've subsequently had to, what, correct the record. And they've apologized to the congressman. But do you think there's going to be any meaningful changes in policy down at the Amazon Corporation?
Well, you put a lot on the table here, and I don't want to miss a bit of it. You know, first and foremost, I want to say that I believe for the first time in history, we are able to actually say accurately on radio, you know, where there's some limits on what you can say, that Mark Pocan got in a pissing match with Amazon. and he won. Which is sort of, you know, okay, that's a pretty interesting circumstance there.
Yeah, that's more than you can say for Trump and Jeff Bezos, but please continue, John.
Absolutely. And the significant thing here, it was, you know, I think it's fair to say a pissing match because it was, in fact, about urine. And, again, that we're kind of like moving to our, you know, seventh grade level of discourse here. But the fact is everybody jumped in. Everybody had something to say. And Amazon, in their official Twitter feed, goes, well, you can't believe these lies about, you know, people having to urinate in bottles and bags and things like that. And Pocan, notably, all he said was, I believe the workers. Okay. But the internet was flooded, literally flooded with images from Amazon workers of the bottles and the bags that they used. And if that wasn't enough, then, of course, you saw the release of the Amazon internal documents talking about the problem. So Amazon had flat out lied and, you know, just completely got it wrong. If they had just not gone there, they would have been a lot better off. But they did go there. They were ridiculed and, you know, literally looked like the, kind of the worst players around. So they issued this apology. But the problem with the apology, and I talked to Pocan about this on Monday, and he put it very well. He said, you know, this is so typical of these huge companies, right? First and foremost, they're so arrogant. They think they can say anything, tell any lie, and get away with it. But if they do by some chance get caught, then they apologize to the policymaker. They apologize to Pocan. Why weren't they apologizing to their workers?
Right.
Why are you apologizing to the people who you are putting in a circumstance where they come early in the morning, they stay late at night, they work through that day, they're giving you everything they can, giving you 110%, and you don't even give them a bathroom break? Come on. It's like, this isn't about Pocan. This is about Amazon, a multinational corporation, the biggest retailer in the world, literally treating people in ways that are, you know, if you talked about it in a third world country, you would be horrified, right? You would say, well, that's the worst kind of labor conditions imaginable.
John, let's contrast that with the U.S. Postal Service. And Mark Pocan, our beloved congressman, also basically says DeJoy should get fired. And Amazon is propped up in no small part, not just by their have-to-pee-in-a-cup sort of drivers, but also the U.S. Postal Service, because where Amazon doesn't want to go, the USPS has to take it the rest of the way. John, the Postal Service accused of somehow failing because they're mandated to pre-fund the retirement 75 years in the future. What's Pocan's attitude about DeJoy and how we advance sort of beyond the Trump presidency with the post office?
Well, hey, look, DeJoy is kind of, can we just pause for a second before we go into the deep politics in this and accept that wherever central casting was looking for like the bad player, you know, everything about DeJoy is like, yeah, I'm not going to answer your question. You know what I mean? It's just like, he's an awful, awful face for the Postal Service. It was like, you know, when they were doing It's a Wonderful Life, right? The guy they rejected as too mean and too nasty to play Mr. Potter is now our Postmaster General, you know? And he's like, yeah, you're gonna be stuck with me for a while, you know, and stuff like that. So he actually said to a committee, they said, well, when are you going to go away? And he's like, I'm not leaving. I'm going to stick around. Why are you sticking around? Well, basically, because I got a lot of things I got to wreck. Yeah. And the interesting thing is he came out with a plan last week that to sort of, quote unquote, you know, modernize the Postal Service. And whenever anybody says that, you know, you got a great institution that's been around since before the founding of the country, and they say they're going to modernize it, that's usually time to run screaming from the room, right? Because it modernizes the word they use for wrecking it, for just destroying it. And that's what DeJoy is seeking to do. He's got a proposal right now to slow down service, to shut sorting centers, to raise the prices of stamps, right? You know, this is how he's going to modernize the post office. Well, that's not modernization. There's a lot of ways you could act to modernize it, but that's not modernization. What he's talking about is making the Postal Service so dysfunctional that people will give up on it. And then what will happen is the profit-making or potentially profit-making parts of it will be bartered off through privatization to delivery services, for-profit delivery services, that'll make a lot of money. And you can bet the first in line to invest in them will be, you know, Louis DeJoy. And so the end result is his scheming is so transparent. And when you've got somebody like that in a position of power, in a position where they can actually destroy a lot of stuff very quickly, you need to get rid of them. That's the kind of person you fire. And the question is, well, how do you fire them? The fact of the matter is, Pocan is right when he says fire Louis DeJoy. There are ways to do it. And that is that Joe Biden has got to, you know, toughen up, and he's got to get rid of members of that Postal Service Board of Directors, remove, you know, that the Board of Governors it's called, and remove enough members to create a majority that will fire DeJoy. It's a two-step process. It's a doable process. It ought to happen immediately.
Thank you, John Nichols from The Nation. Come back, more Devil's Advocates.
Yeah, I will just wrap by saying I appreciate that very brave admission of your fandom.
Prostitutes peeing on each other in Moscow.
It sounds interesting to me.